Whatever happened to Chicago radio? Like Chicago newspapers, Chicago radio was once exciting, dynamic, compelling. And now it's, well, they're both tired and feeble. They're like pudding spooned out of a styrofoam cup. You could eat it and you don't need teeth. Whether you're a baby or an old man, especially radio. Remember the morning zoos? Even the morning zoos had listeners. And now, what is it? When they go through corporate IDE training, inclusion, diversity, equity training, it's all so conventional. All the hard edges have been sanded down. Smooth, like tapioca. No, thank you. On the left, you can hear in Chicago the Bernie Bros station, WCPT, Progressive Radio, or as I like to call it, Commie Radio. But at least they have ideas. They're interested in ideas as well, just not rhetoric. And the only other place to go, if you have a mind, is The Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson. Dan's our guest today. He broadcasts 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, WIND AM 560. And he's all about ideas. Ideas that challenge you. Ideas that maybe make you uncomfortable, but at least it's not like listening to, what kind of pizza do you like, square or slices? You put ketchup on a hot dog and all that other nonsense from people with fake names who grew up in, I don't know where, but they're not from here. We're going to talk to Prof today about, well, he's a political operative. We'll talk to him about politics. And what's going on with the Republican Party as they get ready to spend Ken Griffin's money to find a candidate. The conventional wisdom has the Ken Griffin guys are supporting Richard Irvin, and Prof does not. Although he runs the Irvin commercials, he's got a few of his own. And I've sat in on those shows with him. When the Irvin commercials run, you can just see his eyes roll up into his head. We don't agree on everything. I mean, he hates soccer. He takes great pleasure in attacking the beautiful game. He's a golfer. I'm a fisherman. Jeff Carlin is here as always. Jeff was Dan's producer back in the day on the other station, WLS. He was my producer too, so we can talk about what's going on in radio. What happened to it? How did it get so tapioca? Because Chicago isn't tapioca, is it? The people telling you Chicago's story may be tapioca, but the city isn't. You understand that when you hear what's not being discussed, when you hear the sound that isn't made, and you wonder, why isn't that sound being made? Why isn't that story being discussed? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So the last time I heard our guest's voice, he was ripping on me on his radio station, The Morning Answer, AM 560 WIND. It was Caller Friday or something. They let the callers do whatever they want. And some caller, I don't know if it was Craig from Mount Greenwood or somebody else, called and said, soccer sucks, I'm stupid for liking soccer. And you said you were going to give me a piece of your mind. So
it was Rick from Downers Grove, and he just added one of the myriad reasons why soccer's not a sport, but it's one I hadn't heard before. And so I just wanted to pass it along. And his point was that you know, you watch a basketball game and you see these athletes shoot a ball that's just twice the size. I mean, that's just half the size of the hoop through the hoop, right, routinely with great proficiency. And by comparison, in soccer, you have this expansive field and this net that's as big as a Buick. And there's one goal scored every 7 or 8 games. And so it's just another reason, in addition to not using your hands, in addition to if you remove the goals, it would not materially change the game. Just another reason why soccer should be considered a calisthenic and not a sport.
Yeah, well, I don't know what to say because you're speaking to two soccer lovers, but
I speak truth to power, Mr. Cass.
Oh, you sound like those woke those woke kids that always say that.
That's right.
Yeah, they speak truth to power. I guess if you can play defense, though, on an NBA court, then you don't give up. You don't get beaten by 30 points. So I don't know what to say. And you don't shoot. You don't shoot with your feet in basketball, do you?
No, you don't. No, because it's a sport, so you're allowed to use your hands. That's my point.
Is darts a sport then, or
darts is a sport? Yes, darts is a sport.
Okay, just so we're all clear.
And so is shooting pool, right? Yeah.
Did you ever see Color of Money? You're telling me that's not a sport.
It was kind of sad because Paul Newman, wasn't that Paul Newman trying to pick up the Eddie Felsen story again?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Forrest Whitaker was good in that, though. I really liked him. All right. Now that you've shown your bias by hating soccer, I thought it would be the only thing that I have in common with the other people I listen to on Commie Radio at CPT?
Yeah.
You know?
That should be instructive to you, that you agree with the communists about soccer. That should tell you something else about soccer.
Oh.
Can you just, Jeff was Dan's producer back in the day.
That's right.
When he was a calmer, nicer person than he is now. I think this is
what Illinois has done to me.
You're right.
You've become embittered.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a cranky, crusty old man now.
That's right. Journeyman radio man now. That's right. Jeez, Dan. You guys, when did that Saturday show start? In like 09, 08?
Does my move to IND from LS, does that make me a journeyman now?
I think so.
You've been out.
I play it. It's like, you know, when I think of journeyman, I think of, you know, 7 teams in 6 years.
Sorry, more a yeoman than I guess, right? Yeah. Sorry. No, but I mean, John and I were talking about this the other day, Dan. I mean, I see, you know, corporate media as a general obviously has lots of flaws in it because it's, you know, there's bias. It's told it's not biased, but it is biased, or it's called,
it's boring
news. But it's also boring. I mean, nobody wants to be insulted or no one wants to get their feelings hurt. And so you wind up with this product that's just kind of bland. And you've seen it that in obviously ratings in, you know, terrestrial radio over the last 20 plus years. 30 years really is, you know, tail has been slowly trending down and accelerated lately. But why do you think that is, Dan, that like stuff, morning radio in this town at times, it seems just, you know, milquetoast and doesn't entice anybody to want to listen.
Hey, Carlin, where were you 3 weeks ago with all these insights on corporate media when CNN Plus needed you?
Touché.
No, look, I think John, you said boring. John said boring. I think boring is a manifestation of something else it is, which is unintelligent. And so it's generally unintelligible. I just think that there is a lot of, you know, sort of barstool opinions that are bandied about and talking points on both sides that are recited. And I think, and I've said this for a long time, I know John has said versions of this too. I just think there's a lot of people with platforms who haven't read very many books. I mean, I'm talking about within the disciplines, they're supposed to have something important to say.
How about any?
They haven't thought very much about what's going on in the world or you know, given any consideration to historical context to what's happening, trying to trace causes and effects of different policy choices. There's just not very much thinking going on. There's not very much reading going on. So there's not very much learning going on. And so it just becomes, you know, not even a food fight anymore like it used to be with a Crossfire Capital game, because in addition to that, now everybody's siloed in their own echo chamber. And this is in part the problem of the networks and the corporate media. It's in part the problem of the listeners who don't want to hear opposing viewpoints. For me, growing up, I always wanted something like a Crossfire McLaughlin group, or more to the point, a firing line. I wanted to hear arguments side by side. And in an extended format so that you could see the strengths and weaknesses and you could think about it and you could formulate your own view on these topics, or at least say, now I know what questions I should be trying to answer and let me go do my own independent research and thinking for some of those answers to those questions. But I just don't think that the media foments any of that, with very few exceptions these days.
The Crossfire thing. Not Crossfire, firing line with Buckley. Yeah. When he would have people on from the left, and he did that all the time, it was not, he didn't just, you know, make frat boy jokes at their expense. I mean, maybe once in a while with Gore Vidal, he wanted to, what did he say? Punch you in your GD mouth or something like that.
But and usually, you'll stay plastered. Yeah.
Right. But usually there was a mutual respect by the antagonists on both sides. And I think that, well, now you're right. It's just silos. But the silos we have in Chicago radio are silos that deal with what kind of pizza do you like? Is it square or slices?
I know. It's you know, revolutionary sort of stuff. But no, that's right. So what Jeff said before about people not wanting to offend, about people not wanting to cross a line into, you know, the cancellation DMZ, that's part of it. And then, but also there's just part of it that's just, you have a lot of people that are making programmatic decisions that either want milquetoast for broad appeal, which is to say no appeal, or they're going to pick a lane and they're going to put somebody on in that lane. But the people they put on in that lane are uninteresting. I mean, it's not like John Kenneth Galbraith is on WCPT and Bill Buckley is on WLS. You have people that don't know anything or are particularly inclined to learn anything on both of those stations, for example.
But is that when you have, and I'm sorry about the squeaky chair, Jeff, but I just don't feel like oiling it. But when you have a corporate culture that goes through the sand machine, you know, identity, whatever it's called, IDE, you know, all that nonsense, they sand their brains down, they go through that time and time again. How can they be expected, people like this in the corporate life, how could they be expected to produce anything compelling, whether it's print or broadcast?
Well, I mean, they're still like sentient and sapient beings milling about on the planet, even in media. So I think part of it is just a matter of courage. I mean, you know, very much like most of the politicians, nobody makes an argument anymore. Nobody makes a case for anything. They just take a position. They just wave a flag. And that's why it's so boring, because it's just the recitation of a sort of a top line takeaway from people you know have no deeper understanding. And then there's the general lack of courage. So why is it, like, for example, just in Chicago? I mean, we've said this for years. Fox News Chicago gets no ratings. And rather than do something different to expand the parameters of thought and discussion in Illinois, do a different type of newscast, cover different stories, cover the same stories from different angles, they just try to replicate what ABC7 does. And ABC7 is already doing it, and so are all the other stations. There's no differentiation, with the exception, you know, Flannery's probably the best political reporter, and he happens to be at Fox Chicago on TV at least. So that, I guess, there's a minor value add there, but people aren't tuning in for that. But I mean, there's just no conception that you would offer people something different to expand thinking in a particular space. Let's just mimic whatever the lead dog is doing. Even if we can't make a mark in doing so, it's just those are the acceptable parameters to mimic what ABC7 is doing. That's what the Republican Party does with the Democrat Party. That's what the acceptable parameter of political debate is in this state, is to mimic what the Democrats in charge are doing.
Well, I'll let Jeff Carlin run WFLD or whatever it's called, Fox Chicago. and I'll be on the anchor desk as Bill Curtis, even though people don't remember him now. And you could be Skippy Jacobson.
We'll dress you up like
a homeless guy and say, hey, give me money.
I'll get my partner, Amy Jacobson, to be our Pam Zuckerman. It's a roundup.
There you go. It's perfect.
Ambush interviews. Done. She's chasing them down. But all right. So you brought up politics. Many of you who listen to this podcast, The Chicago Way, know that occasionally I'm invited to sit in when Amy's on vacation and sit in with Dan. One of the, on his program, one of the features of radio, which I really don't like, is that they have to run commercials every 5 seconds. And one commercial that runs every 5 seconds is Richard Ervin, the Republican, supported by Ken Griffin, congratulating himself.
I'm Richard Ervin. When I ran for mayor, Mike Madigan campaigned against me. I beat him. Now Governor Pritzker's afraid that I'll beat him too.
Every time that spot runs, I kind of look over at Dan to see if his eyes are rolling out of his head. And then the other day, Dan, in your role as political operative, came up with a radio spot that was kind of incendiary. It went after Ervin on many levels, but basically called him out for supporting Black Lives Matter, for not being a truly true Republican, and this got a lot of people upset. Why did you do it, and what is the effect?
Well, I mean, I'm operating a super PAC, an independent expenditure PAC, that's supporting Darren Bailey's candidacy for governor. So in the interest of full disclosure, that's where I'm coming from. But I was saying this about Richard Ervin before I started this PAC, before I came out and supported Darren Bailey. I said back in the end of last year that his statement in a March 2021 candidate questionnaire for the Patch newspaper, that I am a passionate and enthusiastic supporter of Black Lives Matter. His words, his candidate questionnaire, he filled it out. He signed off on it. I said, that's a disqualifying statement. How do you have a supposed Republican candidate for governor in Illinois or any state that embraces a Marxist organization? The Black Lives Matter, the race thing, to me is secondary, even tertiary. What is primary is they are a Marxist organization. Alicia Garza and Patrice Cullors, their co-founders, are committed Marxists. Again, their words. They were trained as Marxists. Again, their words. There are any number of clips you can find online that I've played on my show, them speaking in their own words as to their commitment to neo-Marxism. And in their mantra on the BlackLivesMatter.com website, they talk about the elimination of the nuclear family, among other things. Again, that is a post-racial comment. That is sans race. What happened in the summer of 2020 is part of the conversation, but it's only part of it.
After Black Lives Matter riots destroyed cities and lives, Aurora Mayor Richard Irvin bragged he's a strong and passionate supporter of Black Lives Matter. And Richard Irvin wants to be the Republican candidate for...
So to say, after what you have seen from Black Lives Matter and what you have to know by now as an elected official and as a candidate for statewide office in Illinois or any other state, from 2015, but actually go back to Ferguson, 2013 to 2022 or to 2021 when you filled out that questionnaire, so nearly a decade, and you say, from everything you've seen, I'm a passionate and enthusiastic supporter of Black Lives Matter. That is something Republican primary voters should understand about Richard Irvin. And that is, to me, a litmus test for even considering him a serious candidate for the Republican nomination for governor. If you support that neo-Marxist organization that supports the deconstruction of the nuclear family, and of course, we've seen the decimation from those policies in that vein, and then in addition to that, rationalizes looting and violence and the destruction of America's cities as they did in the summer of 2020, then I really don't even know what we're talking about. I don't know how Ken Griffin could have been so misled into supporting this candidate. He was and he is, but I don't want Republican primary voters in Illinois to be similarly misled.
I also think that it might... I think of a lot of things. The first thing I think is that we actually do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists. We are super versed on sort of ideological theories. And I think that what we really try to do is build a movement that could be utilized by many, many Black folk.
How has he reacted to this? I haven't heard from him.
From Ken Griffin?
No, from Richard Irvin. How's he responded?
What I understand from an event he had on Friday evening in the suburbs, and this is great, and my colleague, my broadcast partner, Amy Jacobson, was there. He said, and this has not been reported yet, we're going to talk about it on the show in the coming week, that my alleged support of Black Lives Matter, I mean alleged, again, his words and his candidate, but anyway, my alleged support of Black Lives Matter was because they were going to burn down the city of Aurora, he's talking about. Okay, so let's take that apart.
Oh, please unpack that for me.
So number one, you're saying that as a government official, you will give in to extortionists, because that's how you're describing Black Lives Matter. They were going to burn down the city if I didn't express my support. You will provide your rhetorical support to an extortionist who threatens violence. That's your position as an executive, number one. Number two, excuse me, but they were going to burn down your city. The riots and the looting and the burning down and the occupation of police precincts and the autonomous zones, that was the summer of 2020. The candidate questionnaire you filled out, where you expressed your passionate and enthusiastic support of Black Lives Matter, was in March of 2021. So under what threat were you at that point, or was the city of Aurora? This is a good example of what happens when you back a cipher, you back an empty vessel like Richard Irvin, who has political ambition and little else for a high office where scrutiny attaches that he's not used to having running for local office in the city of Aurora. So if that's his cover story, I would suggest, as I've just outlined, why that is not very persuasive.
What do you think, Jeff?
I mean, Dan nails it on the head there. I mean, we've talked about this tons of times that, yeah, you know, money in politics is just corruption. I mean, that's all it is. And now, Dan, that's a world you know way better than I do. But for the most part, the big dollars go to the people who, you know, can dance and show up and say the right words and shake the right hands. And And like I said, there's nothing behind him other than dollars pushing them forward. There's no true ideology. There's no true conviction. It's and you've heard this. I've heard this in Irvin, you know, speaking of local radio interviews he's done on some of the stations throughout the city. God. It's all talking points. And I'm not saying talking points are not, you know, meat and potatoes of someone like a Bailey or, you know, a Sullivan or any of these other candidates out there. But it's there's you push back on what he says and there's nothing there. And you know, Rauner was kind of was certainly when he ran guilty of that as well. I mean, you push on stuff and it'd be like, well, you go back to talking about being a kid growing up, you know, having five jobs and yada, yada, yada. And it never answered the question. It just kind of just reinforced this image that they wanted out there of him. And like Dan's pointed out with the BLM thing, I mean, they got a glaring Achilles heel in abortion with Rauner and now BLM with Irvin. I don't think it's a fool me twice situation for Illinois Republicans.
They're not. Yeah, it's going to be terrible.
I think that's a good point, too. It's that much more difficult to fool people, I think, this time because of the Rauner betrayals and then the primary campaign in 2018, where he, you know, ran this shameless campaign of suggesting Jeanne Ives, his primary opponent, was Madigan's favorite Republican. And that's what they're doing again here. But you're right, Jeff. I mean, a key thing you said, which I just wanted to amplify, is what they think the consultant class, which is part of to borrow John's phrase, the Republican side of the combine, mm-hmm. what they think is that we can get away with biography. We don't have to take positions on issues and we don't have to defend indefensible positions on issues. We just say he's a Black candidate. We need a Black candidate.
Right.
He was a prosecutor. He served in the military. All you have to do is, and he, you know, it's a rags to riches story coming from public housing, growing up to becoming mayor of Aurora, serving our country along the way, and being a mayor, and then he, you know, manufacturing some credentials in terms of accomplishments as mayor. But they don't want you to think about issue positions. They don't want you to see politicians as vehicles for policy. They want you to see politicians like you see kids in a student council election. Whoever I like, whoever has a fun story, whoever checks boxes that will make me feel good about myself voting for this person. The failed Republicans in places like Illinois, the surrender Republicans, are those who, again, as we started out saying, mimic the left. And that's what you see the Republican side of the combine doing in Illinois. It has for a long time trying to mimic the left. And even when we lose, when we win, the state loses because of it.
The people listening to this should realize that there's more than just what the candidates are about that shapes politics. It's also what the generals are about, the secondary and the second and third in command, first in command. And these staffers often have long-running feuds with each other for real good reasons. And I'm just going to, on the outside of this, I see Dan's antipathy to, not to Ken Griffin, but to Irvin, related to Ken Griffin's hiring or, you know, involving himself with this Rauner guy, a Rauner political operative named Mike Zulowitz, who worked for Rauner and worked for Mark Kirk, who was the tapioca Republican from the North Shore.
And worked for Andy McKenna when Andy McKenna ran for governor. I mean, yeah, you're right. So this is a below the fold thing, but people don't need to know the names, my name or Mike Zolarevich's name or Kasem Carter's name. That's the real gatekeeper for Ken Griffin, a guy named Kasem Carter.
They don't?
Who's a dilettante. I mean, you can know the names. I mean, but it's tough to keep track of all the members of these crime families. So I understand you just look at the people whose names are on ballots and whose names are in the media.
But I would expect, here's the thing. I was the political writer for the Chicago Tribune at one time.
I heard that.
Years ago.
I remember.
And I would expect that reporters doing their bleeping jobs would be ferreting out or at least illuminating what we're just talking about so that people can see like trend lines, the vote to explain something other than rhetoric, like what did Lori Lightfoot say in her emails about me? Like, who gives a crap? But more, you know, more important stuff, like where is Mike Z and Kasen Carter? What's his name?
Kasen Carter.
Carter vis-a-vis Dan Proft on many other issues and of governance. Because, look, the people of Illinois, their property taxes are eating them out of their house and home. Their equity is gone. The taxes keep rising. Services aren't there. And the Ponzi scheme is about to break, which is why I understand Northwest Indiana and Tennessee are doing great business.
South Carolina, too.
South Carolina? Oh, is that where you're going? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but John, that's because the Chicago and Springfield Political Press Corps are part of the Combine, is what you well know. So they're not going to report on their friends and their sources. They're allied with them. So they're going to amplify and celebrate the donors to Richard Irvin because Ken Griffin and the operatives around the Irvin campaign are their friends. Ken Griffin, less so their friend, but the operatives are. Ken Griffin can sometimes do things that upset them. But generally speaking, you know, it's the same donor class on the Combine right and the Combine left. And those are the acceptable players in the arena to the press corps. I am not an acceptable player in the arena to the press corps. Dick Uihlein, who's the billionaire who supports my super PAC and has previously, among others, they're not acceptable donors within the arena because, in part, they think like me and they support me and I'm aligned with them in terms of a shared mission. And we're not legitimate combatants in the arena, so it's not going to get covered.
So people understand, excellent point, but so listeners understand, it's the same dynamic that was for, I don't know, 30, 40 years, as long as I've been in the business, around Steve Brown, who was the mouthpiece of Mike Madigan, and the reporters that fed off the biscuits of what Brown decided to give them, which was just manipulated news. It's the same thing, either on the right or the left.
And you know how they rationalize it. Of course, they rationalize their unethical conduct, the most transactional, the laziest, the most unethical journalists in the Springfield Press Corps. I think of people like your former colleague there, Rick Pearson at the Tribune. They rationalize it by saying, oh, I need access. I have to do the bidding of the big government Republicans and the big government Democrats because I need access. And so they say that Dan Proft or Peter Fitzgerald or Dick Uihlein are bad people. So I'm going to treat them as bad people because I need to do the bidding of the Combine in order to keep the access and keep the stories running and do my job. That's how they rationalize their complicity. And it's just that. It's a rationalization. It is not journalism.
Since I'm in a confessional mood, the audience should understand that when I take off after a politician in my column, often it's really not about the politician. It's the press corps that infuriates me, that takes the talking points and runs with it and then wags their tails to see if they did a good job with what they were told. And you, as a beat reporter, you see this all the time from the, you know, from what I call, that's how, why I started calling it the Combine. But our state is being destroyed, Dan, as a result of bad reporting and shaping the news to fit this corporate agenda. And our state's done.
Well, that's right. But I mean, you know, there's always the possibility that people will decide to revolt. We have seen revolts against the combined, ruling elites of government and media in other states, in other countries, at the national level in 2016. So it can happen, and it ostensibly could happen in Illinois. And there was an opportunity for the Republican Party to do it in 2018 in the gubernatorial primary, and Gene Ives nearly lost. And I think there's an opportunity to do it again in 2022 with Darren Bailey in the Republican primary, because Darren Bailey proved that he is willing to be Howard Roark. He is willing to stand up to the entire world if he knows he is right and the entire world is wrong. And he did that in the Illinois political world by being the only elected official at the state legislative or statewide level that would challenge the Pritzker lockdowns and school shutdowns and mask mandates and the rest of it, along with his attorney, Tom DeBoer, who's now running for attorney general.
And should be the attorney general as far as
Exactly. Me too. And so there's an opportunity. So now it gets back to the electorate. And do you want to choose to continue to live in darkness, or do you want to walk towards the light just one time in the last 50 years? I don't know. We'll see.
I don't think that's fair, Dan. I mean, I think people are, because of the way the money is imbalanced, that they don't even know the light's there, really. I mean, they're not, because that's the one thing I've heard so far in this early ad, that, you know, Irvin ads are everywhere on everything, streaming this and in your phone and on your TV and everywhere you turn, that people are going to be so inundated with it. That's, they're going to see that that's what all there is, or they're not going to see what else is out there. And again, that donor class piece, I mean, once we're talking billionaires now funding stuff, not millionaires, billionaires funding things. Is there even a chance to overcome that, like, behemoth spend?
Yeah, I think there is. I think it's going to happen, actually. And this is not the ideal way to do it, but, you know, the landscape provides what it provides. But there's a billionaire backing Darren Bailey, Dick Uihlein, I mentioned. There's billionaires from California backing Jesse Sullivan. And so you have three different representatives of the billionaire class backing three different Republican candidates in the primary. And so Ken Griffin may provide the most, and Richard Irvin may spend the most. But as you know, there are diminishing marginal returns to money. I think both Bailey and Sullivan will have the resources to effectively get their message out to most of the primary electorate, such that they understand, or should understand, the choice that they have. So I actually discount the money advantage that Irvin seems to have, because I think over the next 60 days, you're going to see that mainly disappear. And, you know, at some point, you're just sawing sawdust when you pour another $5 million onto the first $25 million.
You know, what amazes me is that, and you've said this often, Dan and Jeff, that we've talked about reform, but there has never been a true conservative reform effort. It's always been like reform on the margins. Like, okay, you don't like Mike Madigan? Well, let's get, you know, let's have a Johnny Cullerton that the editorial boards can talk to. You know, it's not real. It's not true reform. And it looks to me that what Bailey is about, what has to be done to save the state, is that conservative reform, real reform, attacking the state or the bureaucracy and cutting it down? Why haven't we had conservative reform in this state, even attempted?
Well, you know, there have been opportunities, and then it's been a combination of the resource advantage that is real, that the institutional interests, including on the Republican side, have. You've had Republicans who, run as one type of Republican and then fold in for the spoils of war once elected. So that happens a lot. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you need transformative leaders in positions of authority. You can't do this without carbon-based life forms in positions of authority. And so you needed a Scott Walker in Wisconsin. You needed a Mitch Daniels in Indiana. Back in the 90s, you needed a John Engler in Michigan. You need a Kim Reynolds in Iowa today, fast-forwarding again to today. You can't work around not having leadership within the party and in the governor's office, at the legislative leader level. And we just haven't had those people. It's just much more attractive in a kleptocracy to get in line for your special deal, your carve out, your phony baloney contract, the job for your idiot cousin or whatever it may be, than it is to take the fight against both parties. I mean, look, Peter Fitzgerald did it, attempted to do it when he ran for U.S. Senate. He defeated an establishment candidate in the primary. Then he defeated Mosley Braun. And then he was pilloried by both parties for 6 years, such he decided it wasn't worth spending another $20 million of his own money to run again.
He was betrayed. He was betrayed by Judy Bart DePinka, Republican, Denny Hastert. And, you know, he's a moral paragon of virtue. And right. Also, George Ryan.
Well, I know. So this is the point. So that's a good case study in why we don't have more people signing up to run that gauntlet. And so it should focus people's attention that much more when you do have somebody signing up to run that gauntlet and bring more people to bear. I think the difference between the incline 30 years ago or 20 years ago, as opposed to today, is the state, things in the state are not well, and everybody knows it. You know, 85% of people think Illinois is on the wrong track. They didn't think that in 1990. They didn't think that in 2000. They do think that now. And that provides the landscape for a conservative reform leader to coalesce a governing coalition. But you have to have that leader first. And so you have to nominate the right people in primaries, and then you have to help them lead a revolt in the general.
To bring it full circle too, Dan, I mean, the idea that legacy media doesn't still have the stranglehold on the information flow.
Yes.
It's made it much, much easier for Republicans. I mean, like you were talking before, like the money spend, like, right. I mean, most people who are true conservatives in the heartland of Illinois are not going to be impacted by seeing an Irvin ad 100 times. They're going to be made mad by it because it's just going to be what they've seen over and over again. But I think that piece of it is really going to be a huge part of it. And I think the ultimate answer to the question, John, is that, as Dan Proft has been quoted as saying, is Illinois isn't broken, it's fixed.
Yeah, well, that's how it's been. And so how do you unfix it? And you're right that the idea of the legacy meeting losing juice is really an important development of the last 20 years. And you know, you see this in extreme cases like that truck driver who beat the state Senate president in New Jersey last year.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm not saying that's a model that's easily replicated or scaled, but it does tell you something that an authentic message and a real commitment to taking it to the established interests in both parties has great currency right now. And that's exactly where the Illinois Republican Party should be. And it may be there if they nominate the right candidates for statewide and state legislative offices come June 28th, or we may zig when the rest of the country is zagging to our detriment yet again, just as we have done so many times over the last 50 years.
Well, one thing they haven't done, or I haven't seen them do, is if you're going to take out Pritzker, say you're Ken Griffin and you want Pritzker gone. He said that himself, right? He wants Pritzker
He said it, and he spent a lot of money in furtherance of it. He wasn't real excited about spending $50 million on Rahner in 2018. I know that, but he did it anyway just because he has such distaste for Pritzker. So that is true.
So then why would he have these people around him who've, I guess, allowed that there not be a candidate for Cook County Board president against Toni Taxwinkle herself, who's at the center of criminal justice issues and the wrong side of the issues in Cook County? If you're going to go after an incumbent like Pritzker, you need to bring your Cook County vote out. The issue in Cook County, besides taxes, which she's tied to, is crime. Where's the candidate? Where's the Republican candidate to take it to her and make that a debate so that votes come out in Cook County?
They've gave up the combined side of the Republican Party, gave up or threw in, however you want to describe it, on Cook County and Chicago a long time ago. And this consultant class is not interested in coming up with, you know, a attractive candidate to take on Queen Sugar to try to claw their way back to relevance in Cook County any more than they spent any time trying to come up with a candidate in 2019 for mayor, despite this historic open seat. Yeah, they just take, you know, whoever presents themselves and they say, oh, well, I guess Bill Daley is the least offensive candidate, so we'll back him.
Yeah,
that's the level of thinking. Because all they really care about, I'm not saying Ken Griffin, I'm saying the gatekeepers around him, I'm saying the consulting class, all they care about is getting paid and taking the path of least resistance to continue getting paid. And the way you do that is get the rich guy to fund the campaign, get into state government, and then hand out the spoils of war. That's how you do it. So they're not party builders. They're not interested in a conservative reform agenda. They're not interested in trying to turn Illinois around. Pritzker is an impediment only because they can't get paid if Pritzker is in office. They can get paid if Rahner's in office. They can't get paid if Richard Irvin's in office, and they can control things.
They're capitalists.
That's what they're interested in. Well, I would. No, I don't.
I'm teasing.
No, they're vultures, is what they are.
Yeah,
they look at the people who want to change and save Illinois. They look at those people out of the people that call in the radio shows, the people that. Organizing their precincts, and they mock them and they sneer at them and they laugh at them and they call them true believers.
Yes.
And well, I remember hearing a few unnamed journalists years ago talk about people like that. And they didn't know that my brother-in-law was a conservative Republican committeeman from the Arlington Heights area, Don Castella. And they were just, I could just hear, you know, ripping on the guy. And, you know, I later stood up for my brother-in-law, but I wanted to hear what they were saying and how they were saying it. And it's this mockery, journalism mockery, so that people like Mike Z will look at them and smile. And that's a sin, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Right. No, I agree. I mean, the great thing is the candidates they run in these primaries, whether it's Rahner or now Irvin or Judy Barr or George Ryan, they brand them as conservatives. Here's a conservative reformer. He's a conservative. He's a conservative who's going to take on big government. He's a conservative who's going to take on the Chicago machine. She's a conservative who's going to take on, you know, Madigan and so forth. So they know what the Republican primary electorate is, and they snow them every time. And they're trying to do the same thing in 2022, just about every time, by saying conservative and he can win. And that's what they always do too. It's like, oh no, you know what? These other conservatives, you know, of course, my guy or gal is conservative too, but these other conservatives are good people, but they can't win. Our conservative can win. So then you check the box, conservative and electable. And that's Jim Edgar's a conservative. Jim Thompson's a conservative. George Ryan's a conservative. Judy Barr Topeka's a conservative. Bruce Rahner's a conservative. And the one they could get away with most people not knowing in a way they knew those other career politicians is Rahner in 2014. I can understand why the Tea Party folks took a shot with him because he's running against a bunch of career politicians like Bird and Rutherford and Brady. And he doesn't have a record. And he's a successful business guy. So you feel like, oh, he's going to do what a Rick Snyder is trying to do.
Or what
Mitch Daniels is did in Indiana. And so you take a flyer. I understand that flyer. But after all of those names and all those elections that I just ran through, there is no way I understand any Republican primary voter who takes a flyer on Richard Irvin. That's a joke.
Full disclosure, we should say that I'm going to be on with Dan. We're having dinner. When are we having dinner? May 13th?
May 13th, yeah.
What's the event?
It's for Jeannie Ives' Breakthrough Ideas group. We'll have a little dinner and a little chat at the Abington Banquet Facility there on Roosevelt Road in Glen Ellen.
Did my agent contact you, Dan, about how I don't want to sit in those, like, you know, those chairs that sink down because I'm too fat and I can't get up. If I sit in those chairs, I want to sit at a table like straight back. Okay.
First of all, I am not part of your team of agents. So your agent or agents have to contact Jeannie Ives to make those sorts of arrangements.
Yeah, that's what you said. That's what you told my last agent. I fired him.
All right. You're a green room writer, John. We got to dive into that next time.
Yeah, yeah.
Before we go, too, I just want to add something to the mix because we started with talking about soccer, John.
Yeah.
And I came up with across a Runner's World article that ranks the distance run per game in various sports. And I'll leave it use this data to support whatever case you want. But baseball is 0.037 miles per game, 1.25 miles per game for receivers and cornerbacks in football. Basketball, 2.55 miles. Tennis averages 3 miles. Field hockey, 5.6 miles. And soccer comes in at 7 miles per game.
Yeah, I know. It's a calisthenic for suburban women, just like distance running is. I mean, I get it. So what's that? Yeah, right. I don't know what that has to do with anything.
I got 2 6-footers at home. They might want to take Dan out onto the pitch. I'm just saying. They're both Greek, and they're both defenders, and they go studs up. You know,
You're using words. I don't know what they mean.
Yeah. Well, okay. And Dan, as we close, when can I expect you to write for johncastnews.com? Free, of course. And the reason I say free is that when you ask me to fill in for Amy, when you're like, I need somebody, and I show up. I don't charge you because, dude, I love you and I want to help you.
Well, so, it's not me. You should be charging the Salem corporate media empire. You should be getting a per diem when you guest host if you want it. You get unlimited coffee too.
Oh yeah, so all that. Nice. Yeah, I get to open that fridge.
AM radio coffee, known shirts, the best in the land.
Jeff, since Dan's avoiding the question that I asked him, what do you miss producing for Dan at WLS when he was just a wee lad?
One of the favorite things about working with Dan was always when we were not talking about politics or news and we were just BSing about culture, like stupid movies and stuff. Cause I don't know if people know this, Dan, and I feel bad if I'm breaking any of your image here, but Dan and underneath everything is like, you know, a 13-year-old boy who likes to hang out and watch Beavis and Butthead. I mean, at your core. So exactly. We always had fun, you know, goofing with stuff like that. And I mean, I love working with Dan cause you're such a smart guy and I always learn something from you. So always a good time, but I don't know if I miss it because it was the setting wasn't the best in the world.
Well, that's what I wanted to get to.
Indeed. John, that unsolicited testimonial is not just from some radio media industry hack. That's from a future physics teacher. So this is somebody who's a smart guy who knows what he's talking about.
Yes.
Thanks.
All he needs is, because he's got the beard and the big rim glasses, all he needs is a thermos full of scotch and a little bit of coffee.
A sweater with
a high school fit.
Yeah. A tweed jacket with patches, too.
Exactly.
I have that, yeah, but it doesn't fit right. I don't know why. All right. Well, thanks, Dan. It's been wonderful. I'll see you May 13th somewhere, someplace, Jeannie Ives dinner.
Some distant point in space and time, yeah.
Yeah, because I can't think through more than 3 days ahead.
Don and Jeff, thank you so much for having me. Always fun to be part of the Chicago Way ensemble cast, the Chicago Way players.
Exactly.
Oh, wait. Jeff did a dramatic reading of Lori Lightfoot bragging about herself.
I did.
It was modeled. I think it was you or Amy did that kind of reading. It was so delicious that after I listened to endless loops of Jeff and Dan and Amy doing it, I just had to roll over and have a cigarette. I mean, it was really good.
Jeez.
Yeah. Please don't use delicious and Lori Lightfoot in the same sentence again.
Dude, I liked her once.
I remember.
She was my BFF.
And then you broke up. Sad broke relationships up. Don't work out.
All right, Dan Prof. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Dan.
For Dan Proft, conservative warrior, host of The Morning Answer on WIND AM 560, and for Jeff Carlin, WGN Radio, and soon, someday, Mr. Carlin, physics teacher. I think you'd be just a wonderful teacher, Jeff.
Thanks, man.
But, you know, I know you don't drink and teach, so
No, right.
I'm just thinking of my old physics teacher,
right,
in high school. And for me, John Cass, it was a glorious Easter Sunday. Thanks for all your calls and letters. And I just like doing this thing with Jeff. It's fun. See you next time on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.